As trite as it may sound, we are what we eat. And in a country where one-third of our adults are obese, and we know that poor diet can lead to heart disease, hypertension, diabetes, and even cancer, when the new dietary guidelines for 2010 were recently released by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Department of Health and Human Services, most of us paid attention. But what exactly are these new guidelines? And how might they help us eat healthier and avoid these health hazards? Well, joining me this morning as part of our Public Health Today series to explore these recommendations is Dr. Donna Bakke, Associate Professor and Chair of Public Health and Preventive Medicine at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Bakke.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you back. So what's the overarching message of these new guidelines? What do you think it's telling?
Well, it's basically eat less and eat better.
Well, that says a lot right there, but we're going to get into the details. I mean, clearly we want to have people eat less because, as I mentioned, the obesity epidemic in this country is really growing and at a very steep cost. I think I read somewhere that 3/4 of our healthcare costs are connected to the chronic diseases that are brought on by obesity.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, and very, very worrisome.
And it's very preventable.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the recommendations. First of all, who are these recommendations for? I mean, where do the age groups fit? And
really, for all Americans.
Children
infants,
included.
Infants excluded because they need to have a certain diet. But certainly, even young children, as you get older, I mean, the recommendations are very broad-based. So they're really meant for everybody.
Yeah, the general population. And I think I saw somewhere that they had some specific recommendations for pregnant women and that type of thing. But generally.
They do. And that's in reference really to eating fish because fish has high mercury content and they don't want pregnant women eating a lot of fish.
But so these are in general for children 2 years and older and all adults.
Yes.
Okay. So let's go through the major new recommendations. Apparently, this is done every 5 years now, so this is new since 2005.
Right.
Let's start. First, I saw that you have to. They're talking about reducing sodium intake, and that's a big one.
Yes. There was a recommendation from the Institute of Medicine a couple of years ago looking at the amount of sodium that Americans take, and we take way over the amount that's recommended. And initially, it was recommended at 2,500 milligrams a day. Now it's down to 1,500 milligrams a day or less, depending on if you have heart disease, which is a relatively small amount compared to what people take in their diet. And most of the salt that they take in is in processed foods. So a lot of these recommendations are called to the companies that make processed foods that they need to be reducing it in their products.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about the political ramifications of that, but that's obviously a key point. So what are some of the other recommendations? How are we dealing with fats in this whole?
Well, it's interesting
series.
Because, they say to reduce the saturated fats in your diet. What does that mean for people? That really means eating more chicken, more fish, more alternative grains, and beans to get your protein source, some soy products if you're vegetarian or you would like to add that to your diet, and eat less saturated fat and red meat, anything that comes from red meat. So beef, some of the wild game is good as red meat, but you still shouldn't make that the main part of your diet.
So I read that you limit your saturated fats to 10%. That's the number they gave as a benchmark of your total calories.
Yes. And a lot of this is very confusing, I think, for people because most people don't know how to read nutrition labels and don't know how to, go about deciding what's 10%, what's
Absolutely.
Not. I mean, I think the basic thing is, in any one week, if you like beef, limit it to 2 to 3 meals a week and then try and supplement the rest of your protein sources with other things such as turkey, fish, chicken. Eggs are good in limited amount and soy products or even vegetarian meals.
And as far as fats, though, I mean, there are the monosaturated fats like olive oil, which
right.
are supposedly good for you.
Yes.
And then polysaturated fats as well. So it's mostly these saturated fats that are the
yes,
problem.
And so, when you're cooking, if you're cooking now with lard or butter, transition over to olive oil, which is a good monounsaturated fat, or canola oil. Not as much corn oil. We seem to think that olive oil and canola oil seem to be better for you.
So one time people were saying use margarine instead of butter. Now that's obviously been turned on its head.
Well, the concern there is the trans fats. And so if you're going to get, if you're going to use a fat to cook with, the better thing to do is to use an oil like olive oil or canola oil.
Very briefly, help us understand. The trans fats are chemically produced fat. Is that what it is?
In how they produce the product, it's an artificial bonding of certain carbon chains. It's kind of very technical. But what they have found is that those are just as harmful for you as eating a lot of saturated fats. So the better thing you should do is just stay away from processed foods that have trans fats and margarines. And even though most of the containers will now say contain zero trans fats, that's only in the amount that they say is a serving. So that's like a teaspoon of margarine. And so if you're eating a couple of tablespoons a day, you're getting trans fats.
It's interesting because that's once again an indication of how the labeling can be very deceptive in a way. Something that people really need to become very sharp on and knowledgeable about.
Right. But the bottom line is, I mean, when you're cooking, use oils. You know, use the monounsaturated oils like olive oil or canola oil.
Well, we've got a lot more recommendations to go through, but we're going to have to take a very short break right now. We're going to be right back with Dr. Bakke and HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR. Back to HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen along with Dr. Donna Bakke, and we're reviewing the 2010 dietary guidelines from the United States Department of Agriculture and the Department of Health and Human Services. So before the break, we talked about the importance of reducing sodium and the need to limit saturated fats. So what are some of the other recommendations that seem important from these
guidelines? Well, the two other big ones is to increase the amount of fruits, fresh fruits and vegetables that you're eating in any one day, and also to transition from refined sugars, which is white bread and white bread products and a lot of sugar in your diet, to whole grains and whole wheat products. So whole grains could be more than just wheat. It could be other things like names that people may not have heard of, quinoa, brown rice instead of white rice. So really transition to eating more of that because that adds more fiber to your diet.
How about dairy products? What are the recommendations with dairy
products? To eat dairy products, but lower fat dairy products.
Or fat-free. Yeah. Generally lower fat. Yeah. There's a desire or a recommendation to eat a variety of protein?
Yes. And I think that's the one thing, as I said before, if you're going to eat red meat, limit that to a couple of times a week and then supplement that with other types of protein. Fish, chicken, turkey, soy products. If you want that, you can eat vegetarian meals with beans, are a good source of protein.
What's the status now of our fish, though? I mean, there's all this talk about, at one point, eating fish being very, very important. And then, you know, as a general population, we hear, well, there's mercury in the fish, as you mentioned before. And the farm-raised fish are more problematic than the wild-caught fish. I mean, how do we sort that out?
Well, I think, you know, the one thing that people do recommend is, you know, eating fish that are high in omega-3s, like salmon, is a good thing that you should be trying to incorporate into your diet. Fish that from lakes where there may be a higher mercury content, and you get that information from your local natural resources, your state natural resources department. You need to limit because there is a concern about mercury because it doesn't, once it gets into the body, it doesn't leave very quickly. The concern about farm-raised fish is that they're fed a diet that's not natural. A lot of times they're fed corn products. They're also fed little fish, but they're not naturally foraging for those little fish, and they're kept in cages. And so they may not have as many of the nutrients and the omega-3s as other fish. But clearly, you know, the more people that want to eat fish, the more of a problem it's going to be for us because we need to have those fish. So farm raising was an opportunity that people decided to have to add, you know, enable people to have more fish. But you need to be concerned about that. I think if you're lake fishing, if you're catching fish out of lakes or streams, you need to check with your local area and only eat those fish a couple of times a week.
There was some talk at one point about PCBs with farm-raised fish. Is that still a
controversy? There is some concern about it. It depends on where the farms are, you know.
So you really need to know your sources.
Right.
And then the thing that always makes me nervous is when you buy some farm-raised products or you look at the farm-raised products in the supermarket, it'll say color added. And then I wonder to myself, well, that seems kind of odd. First of all, what is the color that they're adding? I mean, what's the basis for the color? And the mere fact that, again, they're adding something to an otherwise natural, so-called natural product.
Right. I mean, I think that for the guidelines purposes, as part of a flexible diet in terms of protein, fish is a good source of protein. And I think you need to just look at trying to get as close to wild-caught fish as possible. And if you're doing it in a close-by lake or stream, just make sure of that mercury content.
So in the protein food category, we have seafood, lean meats, poultry, eggs, beans, peas, soy products, unsalted nuts and seeds, all those things.
Yes.
And for vegetarians, obviously, things like seeds and nuts are an important
yes.
source. Yeah. So first of all, how does this vary from the previous guidelines? I know that they're done every 5 years. What do you think the major change here is, if any?
Well, they parceled out a little more some of the nutrients in terms of telling you to eat more or less of something. And then the big one really was, in general, to eat less, because we recognize with the obesity epidemic that people are eating more calories than they realize, because the packaging of products and of food has gotten larger, and people may not recognize that. When you go out to eat, the servings are 2 to sometimes 3 times as much as you should be eating, depending on where you're eating.
Especially fast food places where they supersize things.
Yes.
So it seems to me that a lot of the concern or a lot of the problems, I mean, are because of what we are presented with as opposed to what we might ordinarily, you know, choose to eat. In other words, the food industry has a very huge impact on our diet, it sounds like.
It does, particularly for people who eat a lot of processed foods. And I think one of the take-home messages here is use the guidelines as a way to look at how your diet is right now and then to how it could be. And I think that one of the best things to do is really to try and eat as much fresh produce, fresh food as possible, and reduce the amount of packaging, because by doing that, you can spice up your foods the way you want it. So you're not going to be getting a large amount of salt if you don't want that. And you can salt to taste. And so usually we use less salt than what we're doing in processed foods.
So overall, just help us with a summary, because I think one of the things, first of all, let me ask you, have there been studies that have shown that if we do these things, they really do result in a lowering of all of these chronic diseases that we've talked about?
Well, there have been 2 national studies where they've taken a group of individuals and followed them over a long period of time. One is the National Nurses Study, the other is a Framingham study. And they looked at diets of those individuals. And in the Framingham, you know, risk of heart disease, in the National Nurses Study, they're starting to look at various things like cancer, heart disease, obesity.
But it's the same population they've studied longitudinally,
right,
like over 20 years.
Right. And then they found people who have eaten a healthier diet, which is lower saturated fat, more fruits and vegetables, you know, including lower fat dairy products, and have exercised, tend to have less problems, less obesity, less heart disease, less cancer. And so we know from following these individuals that if you adopt the diet, and if you adopt it at any time, you're going to reduce your risk.
So it's never too late, in other
right.
words, to change your
habits. But certainly it's important with children to try and start as early as possible to have them eating a healthy diet.
Especially because we do have this kind of plague of childhood obesity in this country, so it's not just affecting adults.
And the other thing I think that we didn't talk about was really reducing, and I would say almost eliminating, your sugar-sweetened beverages. So that's your sodas. 100% juice is good, but in limited amounts, because it is pure sugar. You're better off eating a fresh piece of fruit than you are a glass of juice. But if that's the only opportunity, juice is better than drinking a bottle of Coke. So
I think that's a very important distinction, because I think I remember when I was raising my kids, obviously I would want them to have juice as opposed to soda. But this more recent concept of eat your fruit rather than drink it is kind of a more recent new wrinkle, so to speak.
Right, and I think probably the best beverage is water, and our tap water's safe, and it's the best thing to really give people.
So What's your thinking about the political ramifications in terms of the impact on the food industry with these kinds of recommendations? What's the hope, or what do you think the natural evolution will be, or the consequences of these kinds of recommendations?
Well, the hope would be that the food industry would look at these recommendations as an opportunity to make some changes in the food that they present to people. So in the processed foods, gradually reduce the amount of sodium. You can probably reduce sodium in most products by half and people won't know the difference, but gradually reduce that so people who are eating the product don't get exposed. Same thing with saturated fats in the diet, changing the way they process foods to maybe use more on monounsaturated fats rather than saturated fats in the diet, in the foods.
Obviously, there were incentives for doing the opposite. I mean, obviously, using more salt has some incentive. Obviously, I think it either enhances taste. Is that it? Or is it shelf life?
Salt is used as a preservative and as a taste enhancer, both. But the amount of it that is now being used is more than needs to be used, and they could easily reduce it by a third, and people's palates probably wouldn't notice the difference.
And we'd probably all adjust in any case. So the sodium, though, really can lead to hypertension. Is that the idea, or is it just in cases of where you have hypertension that's a problem?
A high sodium diet tends to make people retain water, and that could lead to hypertension. It depends on the sensitivity of the person. Some people are more sensitive to salt than others.
Mm-hmm. And so if we were to summarize once again, just very, very simply, it's eat less. So portion control is a major issue, right? But eat better. So define better. I mean, what's better?
So better would be to have most of the food that you eat be whole foods, not processed foods.
Whole foods meaning?
Meaning fresh fruits and vegetables, fresh meats, fresh dairy, not a candy bar. To eat at least half of your plate fruits and vegetables, a smaller amount of protein and a smaller amount of carbohydrates. And the carbohydrates you eat should be whole grain, whole wheat, brown rice, other forms of grains. Maybe even add a couple of vegetarian meals during the week. And to do that, the best way to do that is to shop the perimeter of the store, because that's where you're going to find the whole foods.
And stay away from the really heavily processed foods, certainly the colored cereals with the high fructose corn syrup. Wasn't it that Michael Pollan said only five ingredients if you're going to buy something
processed? Right. If you're going to look at the process, look at the packaging and don't buy anything that has more than five ingredients in it, and reduce the amount of sugar sweetened beverages that you eat. So start substituting some of those sodas for water, even a little bit of juice.
Wonderful. Well, Dr. Donna Bakke, Associate Professor and Chair of Public Health and Preventive Medicine at Upstate Medical University, hey, thanks a lot for joining us this morning. This was bringing us up to date on all these important guidelines. Let's hope we, get out there and make some changes in our diet, and hopefully we'll see a really, really positive impact. Well, we have to take a short break. We'll have more HealthLink on air ahead. I'm Linda Cohen. This is FM News Radio, 106.9 and 570 WSYR.